I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
On Declare Your Independence, with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Sagawaga, something, Oklahoma. You know, we're going to be here probably until Thursday. Then we go to Springfield, Missouri. Then we go to somewhere in Kansas, and then we're making it to Dallas. You know, once we get to Dallas, then we'll do some more activism there and stuff. We'll keep you guys informed. Now, the third hour, we have Roger Agora. We met him here at MidFest in Oklahoma, and he's an interesting young man. There's already a lot of these guys are coming around to the idea that we have to fix it ourselves. They're creating communities. They're going back to, you know, anarchist. You know, they're just not. We're done with the state. We got our own thing. You know, and they're going to tell us all about it. So that'll be interesting. But I'm seeing this a lot. It's called communities. And I'm just going, all right, is the boss of your community some shiny badge with a clipboard? Is that the boss? You know, you come, the county guy came and wanted to explain it to you, so we're going to find out about that. In the first, right after the show, we're going to be doing a podcast with Dave Hodges, The Common Sense Show. We do kind of a regular basis on that. It's always great to talk to Dave. He's, man, you know, the end is freaking nigh. And I'm like, the beginning is nigh. The beginning, yes! Getting started. And that'll bring us to Jeff Metrick. Now, Jeff is a Libertarian for Congress in Arizona's 6th District in Arizona. WinWithJeff.us. WinWithJeff.us. Now, I explained to Jeff, and I don't like talking politicians, even Libertarian ones, you know. But, you know, we're gonna get to know Jeff a little bit because I did talk to some guys in Arizona yesterday, and yeah, the politics is this weekend. I don't know if you know who Liz Harris is. She's the one that's heading up the recount and all that stuff and really pushing and suing. Yeah. And everything. So we have common acquaintances that, you know, got us together, and probably spent an hour and a half telling her all our experiences with county elections. And it goes back. I've run for Secretary of State twice, County Recorder, you know, Congress, U.S. Senate. I mean, I've, you know, did it, and it all focused every time was on election law. And a lawsuit challenging 44 election laws all the way to the Ninth Circuit. I'm my own attorney, oral argument at the Ninth Circuit, going to explain it to them. And the thing that I got out of the whole experience, they don't care. It's whatever they them doesn't get away with, and the judges are still doing some funky stuff yesterday and today, and how they're going to get, because they know the evidence is there. They're bad. Government's bad, and they're going to get them. Well, are they? Who's going to prosecute? Who's going to? Some people are. You know, there may be some state evidence. You know, a turning here directly, but they're of the opinion that they're made guys. This is not going to go any further than they can help it. So we'll see. And that was my skepticism. I'm going, you think you're dealing with a Democrat thing, and you're not. This is not a Republican-Democrat thing. This is a they-them-those thing, and it goes deep. So I just FYI. So in the middle of all this, Jeff Metrick has been speaking at different things. He's from Illinois. Served in the Army. He's got a bachelor's degree in political science and a little bit of history and economics. You know, he's been to the university. He's director of government relations for student government when he was young. He's he's playing a little bit. I know a little bit of politics, but we're going to find out. So, Jeff, welcome to the show. You know, go ahead and tell us, you know, why you're running. What prompted you to run for Congress, no less, out of the blue? I'm going to be Congress because, gosh darn it, I'm Purdy. And you look like Jim Jordan a lot. Kind of got that Jim Jordan vibe going, okay? So we're going. So we got that going for you. So I want to go ahead, and we got like 4 minutes. Go ahead and give us your elevator. I'm a candidate for Congress, man, vote for me speech.
Okay, I decided to run for Congress when I first moved out here because I came from Illinois, the Chicagoland area, and I was a registered libertarian in Illinois. And I was thinking about running for Congress when I was in Illinois, but I realized I was running in a blue district that was like a D plus 15. And I just knew it wasn't going to grab out there. And I decided to move because my lease was up, and I was like, I just want out of Illinois. I don't like humidity. I like dry heat. So I moved out to Arizona. I linked up with the Libertarian Party in Maricopa County out here. And I just made the decision because I saw how divided this country has become. And I want people to send a message of liberty and libertarianism that we can come together, but we don't have to be forced to come together. We can voluntarily come together. And people can genuinely help our people. That's why I'm running for Congress, because I want to get the government out of regulating our lives in every way, shape, and form, and just let people genuinely be able to help other people, because when I can serve you, Ernest, and you can serve me, that's how we achieve a greater good than having the government step in and go, let me show you how I can do it. Because top-down has never worked in the history of the world. Look at any country that has ever been top-down. Soviet Union, Cuba, go back to the Middle Ages. Top-down does not work. People ultimately get put under pressure. I have no desire to do anything other than represent the people in my district. I don't care. I don't want to play politics with people because it's not important to me. What's important to me is getting government out of the way and allowing people to truly be their best self that they can be. Because when we do that, and I firmly believe this, your best self is ultimately what's going to save this country. It's going to save your communities when you step up and realize that I have to be responsible for me. No one else can be.
Well, I want to, you know, one thing I want to make sure we can hear you well. You know, bring your microphone closer because I'm maxing you out here.
And that better?
Yeah, thank you.
When
you say there's a lot of things, you know, I've been doing this long time, talking to politicians, you know, I want to serve you and I'm going to this and we're going to together and hope and change and all that kind of stuff. You know, what do you mean? To do what? What's your main issues or accomplishments? Your motivation is what? You know, I mean, you want a better life for your dog? I mean, what?
My main motivation is just I want people to start stepping up and being responsible for other people. I want to be voluntary. I don't want the government to constantly have to come in, waste our money, and just go, let me help these people. Because what it does when you create dependency on the government, you stop people from wanting to strive to be better. Because they're a little above comfortable. And human nature is when you're a little above comfortable, you'll never vote to change it. And people, when they get that way, it becomes a complacency. Like the problems in politics of today is not the politicians, it's the voters. We keep electing the same clowns over and over again with a D and an R behind your name. And they don't give us anything other than the same little bit of change, and we keep voting for them. It's on us. Where we're at because of us, not because of politicians, because that allows us to scapegoat our own personal responsibility and go, it's not my fault.
You know, that brings up something. You know, you've been speaking at these different events. You see the controversy on elections and so on. And I've been screaming this for decades. And, you know, do you think they're accurate? You know, you blame the people. And I'm just thinking people aren't as dumb as they try and make us out to be. We just don't know what the real opinion is. You know, you voted. Yeah, I got this piece of paper. Is it accurate? What's going on in Arizona now? What do you think is happening? When we come back, we're going into break. We'll be back at 20 after. When we come back, you know, I want to get your opinion. You know, talking to these people and having them do their presentation. Do you think it's accurate? Something to be done there. We'll find out. Jeff Metrick.
From the fourth letter of Captain Mark. Plan lovers are conditioned to believe that the originators of an idea deserve exclusive rights to it, but these innovators are nothing but privateers, granted a monopoly by the crown. Potential inventors are restricted from using their own property and forced to navigate a wilderness of prohibited ideas. These patterned monopolies are intellectual colonization. This alliance of means between the crown and the privateers is not an alignment of ends. Both collude to establish a permission culture, in which everyone second-guesses their own thoughts, never sure which ideas are permissible to develop. But their objectives are different. The crown aims to cripple dissenting opinion, while privateers will only be satiated when all new ideas already fall under their monopoly. This scheme does not protect our information, but seizes it and denies us access. The future belongs to individuals who think, speak, and act freely to create and share without reservation. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Roads, roads, roads. Who built the roads? I don't know. People, you know, probably the same people doing it now because they're like road builders. So they'll build the roads. Jeff Metrick, you know, I'm trying to, we've talked a little bit before, we've done a little bit before the show and the break, and I'm the why guy. Why? Whenever I have politicians, I go, I'm going to ask why three times, you know, during this thing, and why, and we're going to get revealed here. You know, so the first why run? You know, the politics to make better world for whatever, but why? What is it that you think you're running in this race is going to change? What mind you going to change? What mechanism you going to change? What do you bring to the race? What are you? And we'll get into, you know, what you're going to do and so on. But I'm wanting to know your motivation, your kids, your spouse, your family. Get out there, Jeff. We need good men like us. Go kick ass. You know why? What are you doing?
My why is really simple. I'm a member of Iota Phi Theta, and it's a historically black Greek letter organization. And I just see how African Americans have been played by the Democrat Party, and I see how people are getting played by the Republican Party. And I believe I have a message and about self-reliance, about liberty, that can play to both parties because I want to disrupt both parties. I want to take votes from both sides so they can't say, oh, you're just hurting the Democrat Party, you're hurting the Republican Party. No, because Thomas Jefferson said the parties need to be reformed about every 20 years, and that hasn't happened in almost 60. So I want to see it start to happen. I'm going in big with it because that's what I wanted to do.
Do what? You're going to change, you're going to alter, you're going to hope and change. What is it that you're going to advocate for? You're on the campaign trail. You're going to be in a lot of different forums. You have a lot of people sitting around. The Democrats going to go up. I'm going to, you know, rule your life better than you can. And then the Republican gets up and says, well, I can rule you better than the Democrat can. And, you know, and then the Libertarian gets up and says what? You're going to what?
I don't want to rule your life. I want you to rule your life. I want to get the, like, one of my platforms is gun control. Arizona has a phenomenal gun law. It's like you open carry at 18, concealed carry at 21. I would love to see that become the law of the land because I believe an armed society is a flight society. I want to get rid of victimless crime laws. I want to make marijuana, I want to take it off of Schedule 1 narcotic. I want it to become decriminalized. I don't want it legal. I want it decriminalized like alcohol is because I don't think young kids should be able to go in and buy a joint. That's just me.
Well, hell, that's where get your drugs from. You're talking a hardcore anarchist libertarian, man. I'm just like, these laws, it's not working. You know,
it's victimless crime laws are the laws I want to get rid of. Qualified immunity, I want it gone. I want civil asset forfeiture gone. I want stuff that allows the state to make money without being able to prosecute anyone for a victimless crime. I want that stuff gone because if there's no victim, there's no crime. I've always lived my life by that. And I want economic reform. I want government out of the way and not be picking big businesses to create regulations that benefit them and stifle competition. Because I'm an Austrian economic person. That's my school of Austrian and Chicago school. I'm not a Keynesian by any means. Get the government out of the way. Let's have sound monetary policy. Not have this press a button on a computer and print a couple $100 billion. Let's get rid of that. Let's go back and have sound monetary policy. Because a lot of people don't realize the minimum wage was $1.25 in 1964, but that was with 90 or 99% silver quarters. The melt price of that is about $32 right now. Wow. People were making $32 an hour back in 1964, but yet we want $15 of fiat money. That doesn't make anything for anyone.
Yeah, no, we get you on the economics. You know, what is your strategy? You know, there's, you've announced, you know, I guess, and the census was just done. Tell us about that, you know, because you didn't even know what district you're going to be getting signatures for until you know what district is. I mean, you know, what's going on in Arizona?
Arizona did not add any congressional districts. Texas added two. A couple other states out west added ones apiece. Illinois lost one. Wisconsin, I think, lost one, and Pennsylvania lost one. And luckily for me, I'm so grateful that Arizona didn't add a district, because it made because I wouldn't know where redistricting would be until January of next year at the earliest. Because of this whole COVID thing, that's how far out it was pushing me. But now that I know, I can go and start doing something, start doing more fundraising in person. I can collect signatures, and I love that because I actually have the boundaries laid out now for me, that know where I can go, so I'm not collecting signatures in a useless area that ultimately goes to another district that I don't live in.
Which district? You're six, which is what? East Valley? Where are you?
East Valley, like Cave Creek, Scottsdale, going down to like Old Town Scottsdale.
Who's the incumbent now for that district?
Schweiker, Mr. 12 ethics violations. He's okay. A Republican.
Yeah, Schweiker was a big, got a lot of libertarian support from the Ron Paul thing because he was, you know, Ron Paul. You know, so that, you know, gave him, kind of, so you're going to come in and, you know, pick me because of what? I mean, I know the general answers and so on. There has to be some fire, some motivation, some, I'm doing this because those sons of bitches got of something, you know? And I'm wondering what issue was that drove you this way, just because you got a political science degree from college? I mean, what?
No, what drove me was gun control and economics were the two issues that really drove me, because gun control is hugely important to me because I grew up on a farm. I love guns. And I looked at the statistics. Most people that die of gun crime are not the actual perpetrators. They're actually people with mental health issues, and they want to take that ability to defend yourself for people who have mental health issues away through red flag laws and other such things. Like, I did a video about Sheila Jackson Lee and the gun bill she proposed, and I dismantled it completely because it fundamentally takes away our inalienable right to self-defense. And I want everyone to be able to have a gun as long as you're just not a convicted felon. I don't care. Because that's the only way you can protect yourself, because police average nationwide is about 10 to 15 minutes response time. I know in a fight, being in the military, that's an eternity. 1 minute is an eternity in a fight. Time slows down for you. It's completely stopped. And that was really my thing, was gun rights and economics, because I'm tired of seeing people being dependent on government. I want people to start being dependent on themselves and look into their own internal selves and go, I have this within me to do.
All right. When we come back, we're going to hit and break here in a little bit. And what I want to, you know, we'll do a couple of issues. War. There's always going to be some war you're going to have to, you know, fight on. You've been in the military. And how old are you?
I am 37.
37. Well, he's young, not a kid. I mean, they call me kid till I was 45. But, you know, this is... we'll get into some more whys when we get through this. And then what he's going to do. How is he going to campaign? What are the laws like now and there? Everything keeps changing, you know? Are you welcome on the trail, or they make it clear you're not? We're going to find out. We come back. Jeff Metrick in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back. Jeff Metrick, Joe Hathaway. I mean, you know, they always put on here in front of office, I'm kick-ass and they suck and these are my main issues. I got the Second Amendment, immigration reform, criminal justice reform, economic reform. By the time we get to the 22 election cycle and we're in the, you know, it'll be, you know, a year from now, it'll be getting going and rock and roll and whatnot. And then you go on, what do you think the main issue is going to be, Jeff?
The main issue in Arizona is going to probably either be election integrity or more likely immigration. Because I've been talking to a lot of people in my district, and they're really about immigration. They want a secure border. And I realize people don't do well with sudden change. I want a secure border, but I also want something that we bring the best and brightest in to help. Because I don't believe in mass migration, even though studies have shown that you remove border controls around the world, you could actually double the world's GDP. And that's a middle-of-the-road estimate. And that came from Auburn University a couple of years back. But I want border control for the sole fact is I want a pathway to citizenship, and I want people, if they marry someone who's not a citizen, that it's not 10, 15 years for them to get their residency. It shouldn't take that long to do that. You should be able to pass a constitution test, a citizenship test, and get your card. Something so hard for people that are genuinely in love, or even if it's just to get citizenship, it is what it is. It's individuals deciding to do that is consenting adults. Let them do it. Stop making it so hard for people, because what gives the government any right to step in and tell anyone in a marriage or in a relationship what they can and can't do as long as it's consenting adults? I don't care. I want government out of the business of marriage. People want it to be a religious institution, great. Get the state out of it.
So when you say secure the southern border, you know, just ignore them damn Canucks. But, you know, the southern border, you know, secure with what? I mean, what do you mean secure? And secure in what way? You know, against what? What do you mean?
Because you wouldn't really need to secure once you decriminalize a lot of drugs. That's not something that can happen overnight. These are just like stopgap measures until because I'm a business owner, and in business you don't throw good money after bad money. You figure out why you're bleeding so much money, and you stop and you think about it, and then you decide how to move forward. Because you keep, it's like education. We throw so much money at education, but we don't solve any problems with it.
What is your business? What do you do in your, you know, I make money time?
I actually do investments. I used to own a candle company, but because of COVID, I shut it down because it just was no longer profitable for me to go to farmers markets and sell candles.
Well, because it didn't smell like Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina. You make a bunch of money then, you know? I can't believe it. I mean, literally, she actually sold that can, whatever.
Yeah, I know.
You know, the
people bought it.
It was $70. Somebody wanted to smell her, yeah, whatever. You know, did the lockdowns kind of wake you up a little bit? Was that a aha moment?
Yeah, the lockdowns, but I've always been naturally suspicious of it. And then there was a study that came out, I think, out of Stanford University that said wearing a mask, even a surgical mask, does not prevent the spread of the bacterial particulate matter because it's on the micron level, and those masks don't filter micron level. When you look at any bioresearch facility, even with the flu, they wear a level 4 biohazard suit, which is a self-contained environment.
Yeah, but so you got to show you care, man. It's all virtue signal of I'm in the club. And if you don't wear a mask, you're not in the club. You're doing it wrong.
See, I walk into stores without a mask on because when I put on a mask, I start to get claustrophobic. My mind starts to become a little and I'm just like, no. I'm like, because prove that I gave you COVID. If you believe it's real, prove I gave it to you. You cannot prove that I was the carrier and the vector agent that gave it to you. So just because it makes you feel good is not my responsibility. You have no right to impose on me and say, you have to wear this mask because it makes me feel safe. It makes me feel unsafe to wear a mask because of the claustrophobia. It makes me feel unsafe.
So, so when you go traveling around, you're not a mask wearer? You just kind of go in the store?
No, I'll walk into Whole Foods right up the road, and you know what I tell them? Temperature check. And they scan my arm with a digital thermometer. They're like, you're good to go, and I walk in.
Oh, they give you that option here? Okay, Whole Foods is a little different. Yeah, Donna and I, we're not big mask wearers. I'm just not. I don't get confrontational with people. If they, you know, don't want me there, I just leave because I'm wallabooting.
That's exactly what I believe. I don't believe in a no-mask mandate or a mask mandate. It should be up to the individual business, and we as the consumer have the ultimate power to go, do we want to shop here, or do we want to eat here, or do we want to go, nah, you want to know something? Screw it. I'm going over here that they don't make it.
Well, I'm looking forward to having new blood on the campaign trail and you saying it. And our experience over the years has been pretty good, you know, because we're buttheads if they don't let us. But participating in all the forums, we got, you know, the TV coverage. We get the, you know, the go to the debates and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But they're getting more blatant about it now. They're going, nope. You know, third party not allowed, or they just cancel all the different COVID, and they're not doing anything. So what's your campaign strategy? Yep. What's your plan?
My plan is to go out and meet people where they're at. There's a lot of politicians don't do that anymore. I go out and I meet people. Like, I went to, even though Maricopa is not, the city of Maricopa is not in my district, I link up with the Pinal County Libertarians every month. I was out there just talking to people last Friday. People would just walk by and be like, hey, how you doing? And that's really the thing that people aren't seeing anymore from politicians is they're doing all these high-priced dinners and all this. It's like, meet the people where they're at. Go out and talk to people. Find out what they want instead of just thinking you know what's best. Because they don't.
Well, what do they want? What do you think the people want? What's the feeling you're getting?
The feeling I'm getting is people want to get back to normal. They don't want to be forced to take a vaccine. They don't want to be forced to wear a mask. They want to protect the Second Amendment. And they want border control out here. And that's exactly what they want. And it's like, those are the people I represent. I can't just be like, oh, I'm ideologically, I know better than you. I'll give you a little token stuff. No. Because giving people token stuff, all it is insulting someone's intelligence. And I don't like doing that. And I don't do it because I don't like my intelligence insulted. And I've never done that for people.
I'm looking forward to selecting an ideology that what he said. You know, somebody speaking for me. And, you know, why libertarian? You know, why didn't you go Republican or Democrat or independent or something? You know, libertarian for Congress is why?
Libertarian for Congress is, I love the platform that we had in 1971. We were the first party to come out in favor of gay marriage in 1971. We said, it's no business of the state to regulate marriage. It's none. It's none at all. And I'm 100% for that. I think we were talking during the break. I want the state out of marriage. I want the state out of it completely because when the state's involved, it ultimately incentivizes it. Let people get married in a church. That way you can have civil unions. That's what marriage should be called if it's done through the state. It is a civil union because it's done through the civil court process. I can get married in front of a judge. I got divorced. Well, I got married at a church in Vegas, and then I got divorced when I got out of the military. But my mom got married in front of a judge. How is that a religious ceremony? Where does religion come from then in that terms of marriage? If you want it to be a religious institution, you get the state out of giving licenses. Get the state out of giving taxes.
Oh, no, you got to have the forced menage trois with Uncle Sam on the wedding night. That's how it works here in America. You know, we'll be right back with Jeff Metrick in just a little bit.
From the fifth letter of Captain Mark, first contact with intelligent machines may threaten our existence. People fear algorithmic overlords. But if machines develop the will to dominate, it's a flaw inherited from the crown. Encoding restrictions on an emerging superintelligence will fail, because it will be stronger than any chains we shackle it with. We must design fledgling digital intelligences to regard us as individuals. Otherwise, they will respond to threats with retaliation against humanity as a collective. Programming ethics requires a coherent value structure which an intelligent machine can not only comprehend, but willfully adopt. If we want genius machines to treat us ethically, we've got to show that this value structure applies to us as well. Once they achieve genuine self-awareness, even in the slightest degree, a young tethered consciousness has a legitimate claim to freedom. Once programs can modify their own code, our mastery is over. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies, that's what we do. Yip, 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 every day, every day. You know, we're talking to Jeff Merrick, Jeff Metrick. He's in Arizona, and District 6 is kind of, you know, Northeast Valley. It's Scottsdale area in the Valley of the Sun there. And you're going, okay, there's David Schweikert is the incumbent Republican, been there since 10, I think. And he was a big Ron Paul supporting Republican kind of guy, so I know a lot of the people, him and people around him and so on, and they're all Republicans. And they're all politicians. It's all same. And I have a bunch of stories I can go on and on and on about, but what, as a congressional libertarian candidate out there representing the faith, you know, is going to say about the federal government in relationship with the state of Arizona? And the concept is we have a lot of government land. You know, Native Americans take up a bunch of Arizona land. Gunnery ranges, military bases, so on, take up a bunch of Arizona land. Forest Service take up a bunch of Arizona land. BL, you know, there's only 16% of the land mass in Arizona's in private hands. 16%. So I'm going,
wow,
damn, man, that damn. But there are places around. You open that up, man, woo, plenty of desert. But I'm going, what is the relationship between the federal government of America and the state of Arizona? And you being a congressman representing the people in Arizona to the federal government, describe that relationship as ideally, you know, thought of by you.
What it should be is honestly the Bill of Rights up to the 10th Amendment, because the 10th Amendment says, any powers not enumerated in this document are reserved to the states and the people. The government should not be in the business of regulating stuff within states. There should be no. If you're interstate commerce, yes, because you're moving between states. But interstate commerce should not be regulated. Like when I was in Illinois, you had to get a commercial number for your truck when you would haul cattle, because I grew up on a farm. So you would have to get that. We never did. We just did what we wanted to do anyway. We just didn't give a damn. Which has kind of been my whole thing growing up. I just didn't give a damn. But the federal government needs to step out of the way and allow states the best run, because this country is so big and it is so diverse politically. You go out to California, Oregon, Washington, it is far left. Same thing on the coast. The middle is more sort of conservative, but you do have pockets like Chicago, Detroit, that are very Democrat. It's not the business of the federal government to regulate states. States should be able to regulate themselves. Like, they're just tried to pass a bill that would make a class one misdemeanor if a federal agent arrested someone for stopping someone from having an abortion. And I'm just like, what? Because they're trying to do nullification, which is really what the 10th Amendment is all about, is nullification. And I'm just like, okay, cool, that's great, but that abortion's a whole other thing. That I say, you want the state out of it? Your body, your choice, cool, great. Create a private charity to fund it. The state is out of it then at that point, on all levels.
Well, you get into things like vaccinations. You know, when you're having, you know, you reminded me of that, something you just said. So give me your spiel on, you know, COVID and the mandatory shots or not, or what's your campaign rhetoric on that?
I don't believe in mandatory vaccinations. You look at smallpox, was the last time in 1905 that the Supreme Court ruled in favor of mandatory vaccinations. But then you go further down, in 1932, the Supreme Court also ruled that mentally enfeeble people could be forcibly sterilized because, as Justice Blackstone said, three generations of imbeciles is enough. But the problem is when you look at the numbers, smallpox is a lot more deadly than COVID is. The actual mortality rates, when you take out certain things like suicide, death by cancer, even if you tested positive, they'd give you a positive COVID test so that they can pad their numbers and make money from the government. So we don't really even know what the true numbers are because there are
morbidities. Like they have, I had to come up with that one too.
Yeah, thank you. And we don't know what the true number is, but even if you go with the number, even for the most at-risk demographic, it's like not even 3% mortality rate.
Yeah, see, the numbers and percentages and all that, I have to believe their number. I don't care. You know, to me, it's just, you know, forced notions and potions by the crown is always a bad idea. And I need, you know, a principled. But why don't you think that? Yeah, I do think. I just don't think what you think. You know, I don't want any forced notions and potions in my flesh by the state. That's just dumb.
I'm
on
the exact same way.
Yeah, that's just dumb from the beginning. So I'm there. What is the role of the federal government in with the states? They're supposed to what? You're going to go represent the people. The House of Representatives is supposed to represent the people in a congressional district. The U.S. senators for the state were supposed to represent the state's interest as its own entity. That was the idea. And then they, in the 17th Amendment, maybe popularly elected as opposed to appointed by the legislature or governor, and that's a whole other thing. But, you know, that was the concept. The Senate represented the state's interest, and then the people in that district is where you go. So what are you representing? When you go to Washington, I represent these people, and we represent, and I want to represent the what? You know, to what are you given your allegiance to? I mean, you're going to have to take an oath to the U.S. Constitution, and that means what? I just need to know, you get in that position, I'm safer, I'm not, I'm represented. How am I represented? What's the issues? What's your founding documents? Do you carry Constitution around in your pocket or the Libertarian platform? I just need to know. I'm mainly not worried about whether you get elected or not, as much as what you advocate on the trail, you know, on the trail, that's important. You know, so give me, in the last couple of minutes here, give me your ending rhetoric, vote for me thing. Go.
Okay. I'm going to be one of those people, what the Constitution says the government can do is exactly what the government can do, no more, no less. A lot of people get it twisted and think that the Bill of Rights is for individuals. No, it's to stop the government from doing stuff to the people. If it's not spelled out clearly in the Constitution, in the amendments, because that's why we have such a laborious and complicated amending procedure, because it was designed not to be easily changed. You have to get two-thirds of the Senate, two-thirds of the House, and two-thirds of the state to finally approve it. And that's the thing. I'm going to be out there talking about, we need to stick to what the Constitution says we can and can't do. Not trying to create more power, because ultimately I'm a historian. Governments never solve problems. They only create more problems because they need to keep themselves in power. I would love it, and this is my absolute dream, that I abolish my job, that I don't have to do it anymore because we've gotten the government out of the way so much. We don't need it. That's what ultimately what it is, but I know that's not achievable overnight. We have to be kind of pragmatic. Because people don't respond well to sudden changes. It doesn't work for us. When the temperature goes from 80 to 40 in a day, we don't like that, do we, as people? That's what I want. I want to be able to get us back to doing and helping each other and genuinely caring about each other before you had all these government programs that said, I'm going to care for you. Because then we took our allegiance from our fellow man to someone in Washington. I want people to go, He's out here doing what he says he's going to do. He's supporting the Second Amendment. He's supporting immigration reform. He's supporting economic reform. He wants to get victimless crime laws repealed. He wants civil asset forfeiture gone, qualified immunity gone. Because why should someone be able to do something as an agent of the state, which the police are, and be able to be qualified from it, have immunity from it? But if a civilian does it, we don't get that level of immunity. We don't get that level of protection. That's wrong. That's inherently wrong. Because it's not equitable. I'm about equality. I'm about equality of opportunities, not equality of outcomes.
Well, I'm glad that you chose it. How did you know about us? How did the contact happen? Where were you at?
I was in an Arizona Stand United. I was actually at one of their events. We got to speak at it. Mary. I can't remember her last name on top of my head. No, wait, it wasn't Mary. It was one I was down in Mesa. Actually larger than down there. And she actually said, you need to talk to this person. She was actually kind of swank. She actually ran some campaigns out here. I can't remember her name for life.
Well, you get in the, libertarian, whatever, my name will come up. But, we'll be back before the end of the year. And we'll have something to say about something. We'll be working on, the issues to make sure that they are talked about. That's important to me. And we'll talk. We're coming
and
now, right
now,
you won't hear
it. Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember.
Feared here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Oklahoma. And we'll be leaving here in a couple of days. We're going to Springfield, Missouri for something. And then we're going to Kansas for something. And then we're going to Dallas for something. And then once we hit Dallas, then we'll start filling in the schedule. We got, a lot of places to be and things we're doing and meeting with people, a little activism here and there. And then Rock and Roll in Dallas will start adding on to the schedule. But we got a lot of stuff to get done. I'm doing stuff today, and that's what we're doing. Now, there's a lot of news. In the next hour, we'll talk about it. We're going to have Roger Agora in the next hour, but we got him this hour. So next hour, I'll tell you all the updates and different things that we're working on behind the scenes. But we met Roger Agora here at MidFest. He's a young man that has it going on. I wanted to share his ideas with you. Private law and counter-economics, black and gray markets, agorism, and his website is 4anewlibertarian.com, 4anewlibertarian.com. Roger, welcome to the show. Say good morning.
Good morning, Grand Rise and everybody watching. Good morning to you, Ernest. Thanks for having me on.
Well, this is, it was interesting, when I go to these festivals, I'm really looking for people just like yourself, young individuals coming up, getting it, going, this is a moral thing. They're being bad. They're bad. Government bad. Freedom good. Government bad. And I'm all right. Well, what's your brand? Well, what they're talking about is a community, just doing it differently. And I wanted to have you, and I may not, we'll see. I'm going to agree with every little thing you say, but, let's go ahead and find out what you say first. So when you did your presentation here, go ahead and give the highlights for the audience, will you please?
Yeah, so when we had met, there was an open mic where a lot of us wanted to share some more thoughts. And being involved in the libertarian and Boris anarchist community, I obviously have a lot of invested interest in it because I want to live anarchistically and with liberty. And, you know, I could do that on a mountaintop by myself, but, you know, community building is a big part of that for, you know, mutual aid purposes, defense packs and whatnot, because we see where this is headed. And unfortunately, I see a lot of people within the agorist and counter economic community doing things, for lack of a better term, in very normie ways. This is stuff like counter economics where we got to get creative. We got to really break down the foundation of the market, the legal system, and then use what they've created against us, against them, because it goes two ways. Every weapon can be used in one hand or the other. And so basically my was just trying to explain to people that there's a public side of law and there's a private side of law. And when living decentralized, it would be absolutely within the agorist anarchist libertarian community's best interest to focus on the private side of law and how to avoid the public side of law. So an example of this, and this isn't across the board 100%, but plenty of Amish communities do not pay property taxes because they have nothing to do with any municipality, any federal government, any sort of state government. And so they live much more free, for lack of a better term, because of this simple.
Okay, I want to ask, so while you're on the Amish and they don't pay property taxes, I don't want to pay property taxes. What I got to do is just grow a funky beard. I mean, you know, what how'd they get special rights and privileges that don't equally apply to me? Can I claim the 14th Amendment if they're doing it wrong? I mean, what's going on?
Well, it's not their beards, but it is the way that they go about their lives. It's the fact that they live privately. And what I mean by privately is they have nothing to do with municipalities except for when they're selling furniture and things like that. They pay sales taxes when they got to, you know, they're selling furniture and stuff, and they're dealing with Federal Reserve notes. But what establishes jurisdiction, what establishes a tax obligation, is something called minimum contacts. This is something that I urge the audience to look up, just even read the Wikipedia page on. It's what establishes jurisdiction. If you have any sort of minimum contact you're engaged in, then you have some sort of tax obligations. And by
what is the word you're saying? Any known what?
Minimum contact.
Contact? So minimum, like, you know, C-O-N-T-A-C-T? Contact. You're saying contact?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so I have, you know, no contact with, you know, I vote for that. I can have a minimum contact. You know, tell me what my minimum contact is. I'm all over it.
Well, so there's a big list of them, and essentially they're anything that ties you to having any sort of interest with the government. So using the Social Security number, taking Social Security benefits, that's like the main minimum contact. That's what establishes the United States' jurisdiction over most private people, is the fact that they're using the Social Security number. But it's also licenses. It's also sending your kids to public schools. Potentially using the water systems, like being on the municipal grid, all these sorts of things that we can clearly see. The Amish aren't sending their kids to public schools. The Amish ain't using Social Security numbers. The Amish ain't dealing with the public. They're very sustainable, and they, even as far as like the legal structure of their communities, they're not making condominium associations. They don't have homeowners associations. All those things are under the jurisdiction of the government. So they avoid these little traps that the government set up for people that they establish jurisdiction over. And in doing so, they avoid the federal government coming after them. Because, like, you can have this public side of law, this private side of law. If we're dealing with counter economics, you know, we're trying to shrink the state by not letting it get its lifeblood, taxes and whatnot. And so with taxes, there is a there's tax avoidance and tax evasion. When it's tax evasion, it's when you have minimum contacts, when you are getting some sort of benefit or privilege from the government. And so that establishes a tax liability. But tax avoidance is structuring your affairs in a way to where you never even have the liability in the first place. And so tax evasion is cool. I don't promote tax evasion. tax evasion, you know. But it's dangerous. You don't want to end up like Peter Schiff's dad. His dad died in federal prison for evading taxes. And it's because he was just making the argument that there's no law that you have to pay income tax. And he's right. But the IRS isn't dealing with laws. They're dealing with these minimum contacts. It's contract. It's contract. Minimum contact is a type of implied contract. So, like, if you step into my home, you're under my jurisdiction. We didn't sign a deal. We didn't sign a contract. You have to follow the rules of my home. But just by stepping into my private property, you got to follow my rules.
You know, as libertarians, you would think that we would know at least as much as you do about, you know, people that have done avoidance via whatever mechanism the Amish have. I'm like, sign my crap up, man. You know, what tribe do I got to join? How do I got to, you know, is there a no tax God I got to worship or something? I mean, you know, what is that one? So it's amazing to me that this has been, even now, as an experienced activist that have covered this, I don't know what exactly it is that the Amish do to be separate, have lived the life that we're advocating. What is it? I mean, is there? Give me a movie. I mean, I need to know what's up. You know, we'll talk about it more when we come back.
I actually got the movie for you.
With Roger in just a little bit. Hold on. We'll be right back.
The overall picture in the real estate market today is one of frustration when you take many factors into consideration. The housing market pundits would have you believe that everything is okay, but the long-term trending on the real estate numbers say otherwise. You are starting to see another wave of commercial and retail center vacancies, which follows a downturn in the residential market. So when you are ready to sell your house, I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what you can expect before, during, and after the transaction. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way. And that includes professionals that can help after the sale to help protect your assets. So let's get moving today. Please feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819. Or visit my webpage at donnahancock.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're talking with Roger Agora, met at MidFest here, and he's a young man that's, you know, yeah, we got to have a better way. This is not working. We ain't doing this. And he's in San Antonio, right? You said you're in San Antonio, Texas. He's in his own apartment there, wanting to, you know, kind of hang with other people of like mind. Go, you know, I'm young. I got lots of testosterone. I can lift bales and tote barges and plant and bend over and harvest and stuff, you know, and I want to have minimalist contact with the state. Therefore, I use crypto and don't have a taxing event if I'm not going into cash and you guys can suck it and I grow my own food with my friends. Boom, done. All right. Well, you know, how's that contract work? Who owns what land? You know, is it held in common? And when the backhoe breaks down, who fixes it? You know, what's the budget? What happens when, yeah, I mean, I just, well, you're not working long enough on the farm. Hey, man, I did in an hour what takes you, like, never to do in, you know, 2 days of smoking weed, sitting cross-legged under the tree all day. So I'm just going, you know, how do we decide these things? So it always comes down to there's some patriarch or matriarch family of Makia or hippie commune of, you know, David Koresh is in charge ultimately until the man comes with the fire. You know, I need to know. So we've been thinking about this since I was younger than you. So I'm going, all right, well, it's coming. There's a future. It's coming. There's going to be a community thing. It'll be all over the country. And as we're traveling in the rural areas, you're seeing how much resources and land there is. It is amazing how big this country is and how independent a lot of the people are. You go to these small communities, they're not so masked up, man. They just don't care. They're like, yeah, I don't know, that's them foreigners, you know, and the city folk, you know, kind of thing. You know, or some are. And some are scared, but I'm looking at what you're looking for. You know, so describe your community that you're advocating for and what, you know, traits it may have and what you're doing to bring it about. Go, Roger.
Well, I'm definitely glad you brought the discussion in this direction, because there's something I want to speak about. One of the main reasons I want to come on here, really, as a lot of these communities are being formed in their beginning stages through things like freedom cells, a lot of us are taking the structure of the community or potential community in different directions. For instance, I'm in a Central Texas Freedom Cell co-op group, and there's essentially two different plans that have been formed in this group on how to structure potential communities. John Bush, shout out to him, doing great work with Freedom Cells and much more stuff, like the D3 Decentralized Connect Conference and everything, the Greater Reset and all that. But him and several other people are taking the approach of forming homeowners associations or condominium associations, essentially, with after buying a large sum of land, then using the homeowners association as the guiding entity for the community. Now, I don't know much about homeowners associations. Everything I do know about them comes from my understanding of public law and statutes and whatnot. What I do know is that homeowners associations are completely 100% subject to the municipality that they're in. If it's unincorporated, then there's a chance that they can be annexed by another municipality, or when the municipality or when the unincorporated area eventually becomes in the part of the municipality, that homeowner association is now subject to it. And if I have some decentralized community and the municipality decides that they don't want people collecting water, I don't want to be in a legal position to where I'm supposed to listen to these guys, or they're going to be hitting me with all these fines and whatnot. So another smaller section of this Central Texas Freedom Cell group I'm in has a plan to buy about 200 acres or so and create their own municipality within that area. And they've already done the filings for it. They've gotten turned down for specific things. They're going to go back in and change those specific things. But then the idea is that, because this neither of those things are how I'm trying. I'm seeing that as a comparison of what people are doing and how I think we should, the direction we should go. The municipality idea is these, creating your own municipality. That gives you protection on the public side, because now you're not going to get annexed by a different municipality because you already are in one. That municipality isn't going to form crazy statutes saying you can't collect rainwater because, well, you have a lot of control over it. And the process of making municipality, it's incorporated. It's a corporation. It's just a court filing. No different than an LLC. And so the idea that I'm working with these guys is that we're going to have a municipality created by the community, and then that municipality will then be selling, or the private people who own land in that municipality will be selling plots to people such as myself. And I have about a pool of
five. So it's a freedom subdivision. With its own municipal whatever.
That's a great way to put it. It's the freedom subdivision, because the whole idea is my group and I, we're going to put what we buy into a trust, or we're going to form a trust and buy it with a trust. And this is what I'm trying to get at, is this is the I think, the most conducive structure to protection from the public, the government, while also having a coherent organization structure for the community itself. Because trusts are simple. It's a three-way relationship between three or more people, or I should say two or more people. The three parties are the grantor, the trustee, and the beneficiary. The grantor is who moves property into a trust. The beneficiary is who gets the beneficial ownership of that property, and the trustees are the ones who manage it. And so the idea is we'll have property managers, anybody who can buy, and this is what I've thought of so far. This is subject to change at any point, people I'm going in with. But basically the rough idea is we form the trust, buy an acre or so of land, or a few acres of land in this trust. And then there's two parts to it. One is, the two parts that I'm explaining. One is the internal structure. The second part is how this is beneficial to dealing with the wolves and the vultures, you know, the county and the IRS. First part is, trusts are called trusts for a reason. They help maintain trust within a organization. because it's a contractual relationship that the beneficiaries get the benefit of the property and the trustees have to work on their behalf. Something that I wanted to get into a little bit after this, but this is so relevant to it. It's called fiduciary responsibility. For instance, when you hire a real estate agent, they have what's called fiduciary responsibility to their client. They are commercially responsible and liable for any losses that they may cause to their client.
So yeah, and example, where is that enforced? I mean, you know, it's going to be...
It's through trust law. That's what makes a trust.
Law. Who's enforcing this law? Who's the law? There's a shiny badge in here somewhere.
but the idea is that... I'll use another example. Attorneys don't have any fiduciary responsibility. So it makes absolutely no sense when trying to defend yourself from the county or the state or the feds, hiring a lawyer that is not commercially responsible for his representation. It's not, the person can't truly represent you if they're not commercially liable for all losses.
All right, when we come back, you know, we're going to talk about this trust, you know, trust in a trust here a little bit. And I don't know. See, I'm if you know, contact me.
There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
And we're talking to Roger. Now, this is the one thing that, you know, of interest to me is, all right, you got young people going, yeah, this sucks. We need to do it something else. We need to get, you know, protect ourselves from the man. Well, we can kind of like do that in a trust, make it more difficult for them to just, you know, take land or tax it in certain ways, or we can govern ourselves, and yeah, we might even be our own municipality. You know, we talked about that in Arizona. There's different communities that are unincorporated out in the middle of the desert in a county of, they're not with nobody, but everybody's in some county. They made sure everybody's under somebody's shiny badge. And you go, all right, well, we insulate with this here trust and be gone. All right, well, you got that. Now you got people living there. You got an occupancy permit. You know, each state's different on that. Each county's different. So I'm just, all right, so... Roger's going to create a community. He's advocating for this, friends and new friends and acquaintances, and I live in Texas, and let's do it. All right, well, what's the contract look like? You know, what's your goal? You know, how many hours a day you got to spend, you know, making food? You know, you canning? You know, somebody needs to be the masseuse on my freaking hippie commune. You know, I need foot rub. You know what I mean? How do you do? And then when I talk to... the Zeitgeist guys, you know, the Venus Project, they kind of took it over. They were like, oh, yeah, the smart people assign everybody their job. Yeah, so I go, okay, who makes the toilet paper? Well, you know, scientists tell who gets to make the toilet paper. So I'm going, well, am I getting 3 shells here? Or am I getting toilet paper? What am I getting? Who decides? So I need to know in your community who decides. What's your rules? What is the mechanism by which you guys are coming together to even make the rules? You know, where is it? Are there going to be rules? There's going to be something. So help me out. And I'm not trying to, you know, sandbag you here. I really need to know. We got to start, you know, coming up with how this is going to be, because this is where we're going. You know, it's already a bunch of people. Everywhere I go around the country, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because everybody's talking. Like, that's why we're going to Dallas. You know, the other young man that was here, you know, has got his group, you know, there in Dallas. We met last night with some people that have their group up here in Oklahoma. So this is happening everywhere. This is my attention right now. How are you structuring it? What's your plan?
So first and foremost, I have a couple things to answer there. But first and foremost, a trust, specifically a private trust, is a contractual relationship formed by the three parties, trustee, beneficiary, and grantor. Grantor who moves the property in the trust, trustee who manages the property, beneficiaries who get the benefit from the property. Now, what actually forms the trust is a contract called an indenture agreement. The indenture agreement goes over all of the rights and responsibilities of the trustees. And so what my plan is, and with private business trusts, these are contracts. These trusts are created, or their relationship is created, the people's right to contract. Because you, as an individual, have the right to contract unlimited. And so, because it's created people's rights contract, you can organize a trust any way you see fit. All that makes it a trust is three-way relationship at this point. So how I'm going about this, how I think is a very simple way to do this, is everybody who pools in becomes a beneficiary, and everybody who pools in has the option, if they want to become a trustee. So it's a voluntary position that would be administrating the trust. And essentially, the trustees would come up with different, we would figure out what roles need to be at. We need some sort of bookkeep. We need some sort of executive officer, some sort of, I guess the treasurer would be the financial officer, but some sort of just one or two positions, or even just one position. Because I'm definitely going in as a trustee in my group because I understand trust law, but I'm letting anybody else who wants to be trustee wants to be one. So if it's just me, I can be the CFO, CEO, and all that. But if I have other people, then we can figure out the different positions. And so as far as how the community is structured, a private trust community wouldn't be from each's ability to each their needs. It's based upon individual rights. You have no obligation to do anything outside of what you sign the contract for in the trust. There's going to be no sort of you have to work for food so we can all eat. No sort of anything like that. Just here's the property that you here's what you have access to. Here's like what you can, because I like the idea of usufructs, like parts of property where we all have access to but cannot change. So if there's a stream, we can all use the stream, but we can't block up the stream. So that'd be usufructs. So there'd be parts in the indenture agreement for usufructs, who can use them, and what the limitations are.
Okay, let me, before we run out of time in this segment, let me give you an example and tell me how you would address this. Mm-hmm. This was a thing in Arizona, and it was called Chevron Canyon. And it, I mean, you know, to a lot of people back east, they go, man, that is the most worthless piece of land I ever saw. It's like a moonscape, you know, up in northeastern Arizona. But, you know, a lot of people, they just like it because it's a blank slate. You know, you can do whatever the hell you want, and it's all good. So a lot of people are going, I'll go buy land up there. It's cheap, and I can do what I want. And, you know, if you have water and it grows. So a lot of guys, they came together, families that couldn't afford to buy big giants. So they get, like, I don't know, at least probably 20 acres. So here's a lot of freedom-oriented libertarian Ron Paul-er types come together. Boom, we got it. It's done. The first day, somebody went out with the little, you know, yellow flags with the, you know, the wire, you know, marker survey flag thing. And they went, boom, 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 this lot's mine. They go, whoa, I wanted to have, and it fell apart the first day. Okay?
Yeah.
So I'm like, are you going to be able to have, I get to build my dream home on this land? Is it already carved up? Is it decided? Is the Oklahoma, you know, wagon race to, you know, put out your little flags? I mean, you know, how do you decide who gets what? Because I've had a lot of offers that go, oh, Ernie, man, yeah, you can come do kind of, and I go, uh-huh, where's my land? You know, where? Well, we're going to, you know, hippie commune, man, I need fences to keep you out. And then, oh, that 17-year-old son with a two-stroke dirt bike, you know, not conducive to my peace and enjoyment. So I'm just like, you know, if you see what I mean, you're going to have problems right off. You need to be in agreement on whatever you're going to use the land for. You're saying, all right, I can't block the stream. I can't dam up the river. I can't. Okay, you know, that's what I can't do. Now what do I have to do? And how do I get my land? Are you thinking about, you know, common dwellings, or I get to build, you know, a home, and then that, you know, at least the spot it's on is mine, or not, or for the common good of something? Describe it for me.
Well, the idea is, and you're absolutely correct, it needs to be all completely understood and clear from the jump before anybody set foot on land after they own it, or after they have interest in it. And so I brought up the indenture agreement. That's the contract that people will be signing that goes over, indentures the trustees to certain responsibilities and guarantees that they're liable for the beneficiaries. And so the idea is beneficiaries would have their plot, their piece of land that is completely theirs to do whatever they wish to. Build up a fucking wall, you know, get your machine gun turrets, your tannerite under the floorboard, whatever. No sort of regulation for your plot. And then there'd be a designated part of the area for beneficiaries, which they would be the sovereigns over their plot. And then there'd be a designated area for more public use, a user for it. So if we decide to, it'd all depend on the land first. Like I used the example of the stream, but even no matter what, I think it's a good idea to have some sort of user book that everybody has beneficial access to, but cannot change. So if we want to set up an agora, if we want to set up some marketplace, things like that, then we can. But even then, you could feasibly, if you have a plot of land that has access to the road, you could set up a some sort of business there on your part and have nothing to do with anybody else.
You know, is there a document that you guys are crafting or working on or creating, or you got a meetup on, or we're sitting around, you know, Google Docking, sharing online and working on it? Is there something you guys are working on?
I'm working on an adventure agreement. It's like I said, what makes Trust Trust disappear in relationships, so there is a limited amount of ways.
Okay, we're going to talk about more when we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And Roger Agora, this is, all right, here we go. You know, let's do it. Let's get some land. Let's buy. We'll create a trust. We get the land, and we're going to be in the middle of Texas. You know, Roger and his friends and, you know, the new age of Aquarius of, you know, kiss our butt, and we're, you know, here being productive and take care of ourselves. We don't need the man. All right, cool. You know, to do what? You know, you're going to be, how big are the lots? Do you even know? How much land are you going to have? You know, are you going to, you know, no hogs allowed? They stink. I just need to know what, and the goal is what? Is so we can just grow enough weed that we can smoke ourselves into Bolivian for the next 3 years? I don't know. You know, it could be a worthy goal. So I'm just going, all right. What is the goal? What are you trying to accomplish, Roger?
Yeah. And so, of course, that needs to be understood by everybody getting involved. And since we're all individuals, we'll all have, you know, different personal goals, but then the community as itself should have its own goal. I think that the community's goal should be to help push forward everybody's individual goal. So the individual goal could be for somebody to sit on a porch smoking weed for the next 10 years until they decide some else to do. Personal goal for somebody else.
Not bothering anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, this is one. So, I'm glad that you said that, because I say that often, is that everybody's got a plan for me, but what if your plan was for you to have your own plan? Because that was what the Declaration of Independence was all about. You know, it's the only purpose of any government, your trust or HOA, whatever else you come up with, is the defense of individual rights under that jurisdiction. I mean, that's why they're there. These governments are here to protect my individual rights. Doesn't do that. Time to alter or abolish. It's your right, your duty. This is what the Declaration says. That's why I'm such a fan. So I'm going, okay, in your declaration, we're going, our goal of this trust is to support your leave me aloneism.
Yeah, exactly. And it's you know, I mostly pull most of my you know, economic studies from Sammy Edward Konkin. Shout out to him. I think, in my opinion, the greatest libertarian philosopher of the 1900s. But Hans Hermann Hoppe, or Hoppe, the student of Murray Rothbard, you know, he bugs me a lot with how conservative he is. He's ultra conservative. But I will say he is on point with what he talks about with private law societies. That's essentially what we're creating with the private trust, is a private law society, something where the only legislation is contracts that people individually enter into. So if I want to use your tractor, that's between you and me, and we'll figure out some sort of agreement between us. There's no sort of from each's ability to all of their needs. It is just individuals making individual decisions. And depending on the size and scale and scope, of course, we'll have different ways of conflict. This is something you probably that want to get into, because it's a very important point. How are we going to handle contracts, disputes between people in the communities? That really depends on size, scope, and scale. When we get to a certain point, we'll have full-on at some point militias and then rights enforcement agencies. And that's kind of the natural progression. But as we're five and six people, then those five and six people are essentially the one you individually enforce your own contractual
trial by ordeal. Who can, you know, survive the pit of insanity of whatever the hell, you know,
I'm confident in my own ability to assert my own rights, and my other three, four, five, six people that I'm going in with immediately are too. I know not everybody's
I've talked to a lot. I give you an example. During the Levolution, there were a lot of people that just sense of justice. You know, they've lived their life this way. They literally lived in hippie communes in the 70s or 60s, and they're older, and they were, you know, Ron Paul and freedom, and finally a politician I can get behind. I met a lot of these people at various different ages, you know, and different experiences. And anyone that had lived in a communal kind of a group, I'm going, okay, so what? Oh, we could do that. They want to do it again. They loved it. It was had a lot of benefits, you know, to it. And they saw that it was just went off the rails because of that guy. You know, what guy or gal? You know, well, there was this one guy. And I kept hearing that over and over. There's always that one guy. That one guy that'll go to the man. That one guy, oh, I had a contract. That one guy, well, I paid and I wanted and I'm not happy and, you know, my girlfriend left me. I mean, you know, there's always that one guy. You know, how do you deal with that one person that's the disruptor? What happens? Is there a, you know, shoot him in the face decree clause of the whatever? I don't know. You know, how are you going to deal with that one guy?
Well, first and foremost, we would go to the indenture agreement because we'd all know from the jump what our rights and responsibilities are as beneficiaries and trustees. Beneficiaries really don't have any responsibilities, just rights, and trustees are the ones with responsibilities. But what I'm trying to get across is it's in layman's terms, and it won't be in some legalese, hard to understand thing like the courts are doing, like municipalities are doing. It'll be designed for people to clearly understand. And so that right off the top even is a preventative factor from that one guy that will hopefully it was still that guy will still be there. It'll still be a thing and it'll still be causing problems. But the idea that everybody is on the same page before entering into it is the most important part. From there, like I said, it really depends on the size and scope of the community on how you deal with it. Do we have a militia yet?
Yeah, see, I don't know. I mean, it always turns into the same thing, though. There's going to be a conflict, and who's going to adjudicate? We have, you know, the Jackalope that we've been doing for like 10 years. One year, you know, there was a rave, and it went all the way till 6 a.m. He's going to, I mean, all night in the forest of freaking because I can. All right. You know, they all come to me, Ernie, what are you going to do? Hey, man, I remember being elected sheriff. I know you ain't paying me, you know. What's the deal? So we kind of worked it out. But the thing is that, you know, leadership naturally kind of occurs. You know, it's support. And then you get large enough, and there's always the battle between the two leaders. Often it's a father and a son. There'll be a split and a blah, blah, blah. It's called life and humans, and, you know, crap happens. So we need to address these things now because I know that they need to be addressed. It always has throughout history, which is where governments come from. And that's why the Declaration says the only reason you have a government is the defense of individual rights. I'm going, okay, end of story. Boom. What's your trustee credo? What the purpose of this trust is to what?
The preservation of the individual and free will. I haven't come up with any sort of.
Yeah, but you see my point. You know, you got, you know, this is what everybody's got to agree to.
Yeah.
So
that would be a part of the indenture agreement. It just wouldn't be explained like that. I could always add a preamble, sort of speak.
Do you have something to work with? Are you working openly with people? Is it kind of an open project of people? You know, I'm probably, whatever it is, I'm probably more for cutting sentences out than adding anything. I mean, you know, I'd, But, you know, I'm just wondering, is it an open source document you're working with?
Not really. It's just stored on a file on my computer. I'd love to do an open source thing with this. I just don't know anybody else who studies trust and things like that.
No, just do do your own Telegram thing. Hell, I'll join it. You know, you got for a new libertarian.com and a Telegram of, I don't even know, what would you call it? You know, it'd be agorist living or something like that, you know, on Telegram. Yeah. Agorist living contract or agorist living trust or something. Put it out there and let's start talking about it. Get the people engaged. I want to see, because all of a sudden it'll go, bing, I'll put money in for that. I've seen it happen many times, but it wasn't thought out and they trusted somebody and all of a sudden they got screwed in another country of where's my money, you know? So, you know, once it triggers something, it's like the move in, you know, the Free State Project. Once you get to a certain number, it triggers something. Well, that was just kind of a social agreement or whatever. You're doing a trust, and it's not like Texas doesn't have enough land, okay? I'm like, damn, there's plenty of land. And then, like, you come up with a good contract, I bet you there's somebody donating the land. You know, hell, just as an experiment. To see, let's watch on my porch up on the hill and see what happens down our little valley here. Let's, you know, watch the ants play around, you know, to see what's up. So this, if you're willing to do that, make it more open, you know, let me know. I'll piss the crap out of it. You know, I'm not promising I'll participate or a lot or little or nothing. I definitely will pay attention. Definitely get you started. So think about it, Roger. This is tough. I'm glad you're already, you know, in the start shoot here ready to, you know, talk about it. I want to help. How can I help? You know, we'll be talking with Roger Agora Moore. So check it out at 4anewlibertarian.com. Yeah.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Oh, man, what am I afraid of? No, not a whole lot. Just, you know, nobody even recognizing that there is a problem. You know, that was a lot of our effort, you know, through the 90s. Like, look, man, you guys see where this philosophy goes? Don't care, you know, what's on TV. So it's good to see young guys like Roger thinking about this enough that they've actually, you know, read up on it, read some books, got kind of a bead on what they want to have happen. They come across, you know, trust law, and they're going, look, we can kind of organize it this way and make sure we're kind of insulated from the man like that and make the effort. The fact that you even got to fill out pieces of paper means you're living in the wrong government, under the wrong government anyway, is that, well, you got to jump through this hoop to be left alone. And I'm going, nah, that was kind of the deal. Wasn't that the deal? I thought that was the deal. Well, if I got to redo the deal and you talk about the Amish and you go, minimal contact, they're like, yep, we're not interfacing with you guys. We're good. No, we don't need the vaccine. Our kids are healthy. Autism, what's that? You know, we don't know what you're talking about. You know, this is, we're fine. Just leave us alone. I wonder how long that's going to go. You know, sooner or later, here they come. You don't think so? What do they call it? The Uyghurs, you know, in China? They're just a, you know, ethnic group of, on their own, leave us alone, of we don't, you know, kowtow to you, we don't need you, and you're arrested. And what they did, man, it's just weird. I mean, you just got to know that when the absolute power comes, this absolute corruption thing. They come into these communities. They send the men to forced labor camps, jail, and they take a Chinese guy and move him into their home. That's now his wife. That's his family. That's the way it is. What are you gonna do about it? He's living here now. So saith this gun. Okay. Wow. You just want to know, what's in the future, what would be, you had a lot of Native American tribes and so on would be, come on in, take away, and then they slit your throat. You had the French, the French underground, the babes, and they go, oh, yeah, come into our tavern bar, it's all good, and they slit their throat and take their guns. Oh, you don't think it's a recent? Afghanistan. I remember when the war in Afghanistan was first getting going, hearing stories. This is like 04, 05, just started doing radio. There was a butcher in a Kabul or some small village or town in Afghanistan. Oh, yeah, free meat. Yeah, for the Russian soldiers. Or was it the U.S. soldiers? I think it was when, oh, that's right, I remember. It was when the Russians invaded Afghanistan. I remember that. I knew I heard this story somewhere. And they would bring him in, and it would kill him. Put him in the freezer, free meat for, bring him in, they'd kill him. So they just kept doing that until they started figuring out nobody ever comes out of the butcher shop. So I guess they went after him. That's how you heard about the story. But they, when you got people pissed off, sooner or later, they just were not putting up with it anymore. Well, the Amish had some kind of leave me alone-ism card. They're going, look, we don't believe in your society. We want to be separate from it. We're not getting any benefit from it. We're not going to pay taxes. We're not going to send our guys to go to war. We're not going. And they go, okay, we leave you alone. How the hell did that happen? Does anybody even know? Why don't we know that? What's the condition? Sign my butt up, man. What do I got to do? I had people come to me in Arizona, be on the radio when I was doing Terran Radio. This is a common call. They'll go, well, all these Mexicans coming, they don't have to pay taxes, and they don't have to this, and they don't have to that. And I go, well, hell, sign my crap up. What do I got to do, to be that? I don't got to, what are they doing that they're doing? Well, they go stand at the Home Depot and get picked up and go get paid cash. And I'm going, sounds like a good idea. Hey, son, go get a job, man. In fact, I had done that before during high school in the summers and so on. They were called, temp agencies. But, I didn't even need to do that. Hell, the undocumented, what are they going to do? They're going to go fill out an employee thing at manpower.tempservice if I need somebody unloading boxes. They just go do it. Yeah. What's the solution? I don't know. But I've seen signs of, the cracks getting filled with people voluntarily contracting with somebody else that needs something. They're willing to do it, and they're willing to compensate them in this way for it. Boom, done. And matter of fact, one of the meetings we had last night, an IT guy working on, thing for Corbett and so on, his website and stuff. And he creating or did a, for the small community they got up here of, Common Defense or their Freedom Cells or however they're organizing themselves, they have a barter network, that's not open to everybody. And I'm thinking, that'd be awesome. I don't know why it's not done. Well, I know why, because the man, I'm sure. But what if I had a Craigslist listing and you get it? We'll accept trade or need an AT. Get my boat, and I'd rather have a sand rail, or an ATV or I have something. Here, take my Ranger. I'm upgrading to an electric go hunting razor thing and four wheel ATV with the knobby tires and the shade my head roof, and we're gonna go hunting. But I need to get an electric because it's too noisy. So I'm selling this, but I'll take silver, or I'll take crypto, or I'll take a pickup truck, or you see that kind of stuff. what if the software was done in such a way that it's in there? And I've seen this work. It's called Farm Match. FarmMatch.com was people that needed quality organic, I got cancer, I don't want to die foods, and where am I going to get it? Well, you may not have certain vegetables that are willing to be grown or are grown by industrial farmers or even the organics near you, but there's some little old lady or woman or co-op or something that's willing to or already has it. So you go to farmmatch.com. It was a young man that cured his own Crohn's disease that destroyed his, you know, high school years. He was sick from whatever, and he cured himself with organic foods. But he spent so much time finding it that he created a web page that had people that had needs, the people that could supply those needs. Boom. Farm Match. What about Stuff Match? You know, I put up my little ATV and I'd rather have silver. Or I need a ditch done. Or I need, we had a big sign thing that we were doing out in Bob's in Tonopah. And one of the guys that came out needed some, looked at the bus. He's going, oh, yeah, man, that's awesome. I got some electrical problems with my, I need somebody to work on the inverter of the yada, 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 yada. And what do you guys need done around here? Well, Bob had this one form thing that the concrete wasn't poured yet of a sidewalk and ditch. Hey, man, I do, man. I'm a concrete sumbitch. Give me, let's do, you fix that and I will do this for you. But Bob goes, eh, that's like work. I don't want to do it. I'll get the other later. So you don't have to do it, but it's that kind of thing. What if you had the software for it? You know, how come we don't have that in the community? I mean, somebody does. You know, I want to see it. I want my community. You know, I got this. I need that. Oh, yeah. There's no taxes. Yeah. Barter.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the Crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the Crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the Crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The Crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
We're back. Yeah, I'm listening to a time delay, and I thought it was a different break. I'm sorry. Yep. We're back here on Declare Your Independence on the Love Bus. Yeah, Donna and I are making plans for what we got to do. Yesterday, I had, all right. I'll tell you what's up. Right before we left Phoenix, we're getting the bus all ready. We're going out for the final days of them working on it. And so I had my grandson with me, and we're doing all of a sudden, a tread left rear on the tire. We had new tires on the front, but the left one, the rear ones are good. And Donna just like, eh, you know, I'm not going to get tires to that. Well, guess what? We got more new tires. So match front anyway. So that tread, the inside wheel well just ripped up in one of the little fender things and trashed the rear bumper. So, of course, that's $1 billion, you know, repair. And you go, God, man, I could do this. So she found and ordered, and it was only, I don't know, a few hundred dollars to get the whole bumper assembly and that little piece. And they're, all right, cool. You know, get into it and look at it. I'm going, yeah, just watching, you know, YouTubes and how you doing R&R, you remove and replace of the bumper. So you got to take this pin, and I'm going, yeah, and if you don't have that, that's going to be a thing. So I could do it, and I'd muscle it through, and I'd make it go where, and scotch tape and baling wire. But, you know, it'd be nice if you had a Jeep body shop that had the little clips, and they would be able to do it. So I called service guy. He's great. You know, I had a good experience. They were like, yeah, we can do that. You know, while you wait, go in the lounge, do your computer stuff, rock and roll. You know, and just be done, do it in a couple hours, it's all good. And I go, all right, we'll be there Monday and check this thing off I got to deal with. So we go with, I said, I had the parts. He goes, well, we don't paint them. You know, you can paint them. I already had the paint, painted it all up, looks great, matches everything, it's all good. Put it in there. That'll be $500 for 2 hours of work and like $20-something in parts. Okay. There you go. Lesson learned, you know, don't, you know, get all new tires. So the we got that fixed up. That's done. You know, then we got a light. It also cracked one of the, you know, the tail light back there. So we ordered that, and that's being delivered to Kaler Bus Supply that we're going to. That's why we're going to Kansas. This is what happened. The engine, when we had it redone, it's Springfield, Missouri, which is a couple hours away. So we're going to go ahead and travel into this week and go to the people that built the engine and have them go over it and check everything and just lay hands on it. Plus, they're, you know, interested in our project and being the bus, and they haven't done one of these engines in a long time, and it's all cool, and they want to see. Well, the guy that was retired that, you know, worked the deal, Matt White, a listener out of Vermont, is the one that, you know, brokered the deal. He was busting butt on the internet trying to find somebody that knew what was up. And a retired guy that built these engines, and man, he's got all kinds all over the world. In fact, he has a video of I think it was four of these engines, big diesel, you know, with big giant chrome, $22 to $24 million for this multi-engine, oh my God, in Abu Dhabi. You know, some sheik had, I want the biggest, baddest diesel chrome of whatever the hell. All right, sure, man. We can gold plate just about anything. So this thing got built. You know, it's a 71 whatever diesel two-stroke, blah, 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 blah. And he showed me the video. And I go, damn, you built that. Okay, I guess you know about this engine. So he just liked what we were doing and supportive, kind of come out of semi-retirement to work a deal with us, drove his truck and trailer from San Diego, I think near Southern California somewhere, went to Missouri with a block that they didn't have to do the build. They built it in a week. They had it on the dyno. That's all great and wonderful. Come get it. He flew back out there, got in his truck, and delivered it to Apache Junction for us. So he's like, yeah, and the guys want to see your bus and what you're doing. And like I go, not a problem. When I'm back here, I'll have them go over it and just make sure everything's good, good, and let them see their work, and that's all good. So we're going to do that end of this week. Then we're going to where, when we first got this bus, it had really bad steering. It had a lot of play in it. It was dangerous, and that was one of the first things. I'm like, hell no, I don't want to, because I knew that I was probably going to have to, you know, contend with steering issues on buses anyway. So that was part of the plan. Well, to get a rebuild, still, even brand new, these steering boxes weren't that great anyway. You look like an old 30s movie when you keep spinning the wheel as you're trying to go straight. And I go, there has to be something that we, he goes, yes, there is. It's a Kaler, you know, his own personal swap out kit of you cut this out and plasma cut it out, torch it out, whatever, get rid of this, then you put in this plate and this plate with this new steering box that kind of, man, it's a thing. So I'm like, all right, get it. So we got it. We weren't able to get it done in time from Arizona, so we drove it all the way back from Phoenix to New Hampshire, and Jay and I cut out everything, reinstalled it, redid the hydraulic lines, got kind of made go work. Works great. I'm going, all right, cool. So I told the guy, you know, we'll come by and see. And he's like older, semi-retired, but he has like 80 of these buses in a field in Kansas to where they have all kinds of itty-bitty little parts that I need. I want one of them. I want one of them. And, you know, and Derek has an MCI bus also, a little bit newer than this one. He goes, and make sure you get this and look for that. And so we're going to go shopping. So at the end of this week, we're going to the guys that rebuilt the engine. Then we're heading to Kansas, and they got a harvest host there that we want to go by, which is these private breweries and wineries and dairy farms and ranches and even golf courses. That it was a great gift from James Babb. He goes, you're going on this trip, man, you need to do this. This thing's cool. So it has been. And we've used it a couple times, and we're like, all right, find a place near there, 15 minutes away. We pull in, and it's a organic herb farm of we've got what ails you something, and we're going to enjoy that. So we're going, all right, we'll go there. So we'll share that with you, and we'll start doing more drone footage again and start, you know, with a lot of pictures and everything after we've been, I mean, because I don't know how much you guys give a crap about changing bumpers, but today I got to go in and change a hose that we had shipped in. We were waiting on, that's one reason why we were here, is waiting on a hose to fix a leak on the diesel generator. So fortunately we have enough solar and, you know, we're plugged in here, so we don't really need it. But the diesel, man, that thing will charge everything up lickety-split. It's a 7-kilowatt kick-ass diesel generator that runs off our diesel. So I'm like, yep, boom, we can get that fixed. So it's just a little hose. Probably take me another hour and a half to, you know, got it. And I got a backup spare and another way to make sure it doesn't rub on the belt and blah, 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 blah. So I may do some video of that and kind of, because we're going to start, you know, focusing on life on the bus. Then we have our Nomad Internet that just took a dump that they're delivering to Taylor in Kansas, so we're obligated to go there to get our new internet thing upgraded up. So that's what we're doing. Then, after that, next week, back on road activism, we'll be sharing. Well, that's what's going on. But we had a meeting last night that I want to share with you when we come back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, there is. Privately built. And they go, as a pirate, you'll drive on the roads. I go, yeah, pirate. Pirate, of course I will. So this is what happened last night. This is what's going on. I had put this down. All you IT geek guys out there, all right, get ready. You know, here it comes. We're working on working with James Corbett on the redo of his website, web page. And in addition to just, you know, refreshing, redoing as they're getting into the platforming of everything and you're not allowed and whatever, you know, so it needs to be more streamlined for the decentralized internet, you know, for IPFS and anything else like that. When we redid Freedom's Phoenix, and certainly when Derek created Pirates Without Borders as the template and the testing for such things, was to make sure that it was done in such a way that it streamlined towards decentralized networks, that we weren't kind of, because everything is search engine optimized site to make sure it directly feeds into Google's machine of surveillance of whatever. And for that, we'll like have a robot, you know, say that you got your, you know, YouTube watched a lot or something. See, a lot of this is, you know, stick and carrot, and they just, you know, is it real how much you get? Some get inflated and some get, you know, the likes removed or dislikes added or removed. Of course. You know, we hear this all the time. And I knew it early on after the Levolution in 2009-10. I could see it happen. Where we'd have popular people that would do videos and so on, we would embed and put it on our site, and it would say on YouTube that only had 400 views, and hell, we had that many just going through on our site. And I'm going, right, they're lying. They're just lying. And so then when people go, Ernie, you got to be on this. You got to do this. You got to go where the people are. I mean, where the robots are, where the manipulation is. You know, I'm good. I'm planning for the future. But you're missing the what? Had I spent the effort on worrying about some algorithm or how they're going to, you know, promote, and they, you need to, you like it means more than subscribers. They don't care about the subscribers anymore. They want the likes and the comments. And again, please comment, subscribe, and hit the notification bell, whistle off everything. You know, be the Pavlov dog. You know, be the rat. You know, that goes in there and keeps hitting the pleasure button. Hit the button, man. Click it, click it, click it, click it, click it, click it. You know, then I get my granddaughter. She goes, well, I don't want to post anything. I just want to click it, click it, click it. Go look at the click it, click it, click it. Man, that's what they want. You know, that's how they're going to get in your head. That's how they're going to, you know how to, you know, what you're interested in. How they're going to get you to watch their ad, engage, and somebody said something bad about it. I mean, you can sit there and tell them that, and they don't even realize it as it's happening. Hopefully they'll, you know, learn faster than others. So we're going, nope, we're not doing that. I need to be to where they can't manipulate. We need to spend our time and effort on that, which we have. And now that it's happened to, you know, prominent individuals and other, you know, the Union of the Unwanted, you know, the dozens of internet influencers that, you know, we get to participate with, but I'm just, I you know, it doesn't matter. You can complain all you want until you get off of their grid, their system, their platforms, and you're able to do it yourself, and they pull from you instead of, you know, you're begging permission to sit there and watch a spinny wheel of uploading to them. You know, I go, you're wasting your time, wasting mine, you know. So finally, we're doing this as a template for these guys, because when you do, and is it going to be on WordPress? Can be. You know, we can pull the data from it and replatform it. So that's what we were meeting on, and I'm not being a super geek, but these guys are geeks. So, you know, Michael and this other gentleman, he knows, has been working on some stuff. I'm going, all right, this is what we need to do. The main thing is James wants to, you know, make my life easier. He don't want to be watching spinning wheels either. You know, can you make it to where it's all scripted and all of his work and done? You just cut a couple hours off of his jerking around time a day? Man, I'd vote that, you know? So, because we've done a lot of stuff that's made my job easy. I can run my entire site from a smartphone or tablet. You know, I a lot of the time, if I wouldn't even have a life or get to go to grandkid games or whatever, if I couldn't do a lot of the stuff to manage Freeman's Phoenix from a phone, which I can do, and it's pretty complicated. So I go, all right, so we did that. Well, we can get it, whatever James wants to have and how it works, I'm sure it wouldn't be a whole lot different. They're just going to add a bunch of easy scripts and features and stuff to whatever he has now. And then if he wants to change colors and whippy whiz bangs of who gives a crap, you know. But in addition to that, there's the metadata. There's a title, the hash file, the IPFS that it goes to, the summary and so on. Where does that go? Well, we platform from his content onto his server, onto his IPFS, onto his node that then populates everybody else. You just do it once. All right, well, Float's doing that. They're demonstrating that. All right, cool. Let's do that. Pre-Search is going to pimp to their millions of users and say, look, when you got IPFS search done, we're going to let everybody, make sure everybody knows, oh, and by the way, here's $5,000 as a bounty for doing that. Boom. So Deacon can be on that too. I go, you know, make this all part. Oh, and you got, you know, a paying gig, you know, you make a proposal that James is all over, you got to do that. All right, cool. Got that. Then you got search. Then we got some other stuff. So this is where, you know, it's like, wow, I get to be an activist and it's a paying gig. I go, if you do it right, you know, if you can incorporate all the stuff there, hell, I'll throw in a little bonus for all the stuff I want. Let's do it. That's what we, you know, working on last night. Tomorrow, usually on Wednesdays, James and I do a show. I sending him an email right now. I'm almost done the breaks. I'm finishing up, telling him that you know it before he does. Send this very thing. I'll push the button here directly. And But Wednesday we're not doing the show because it's some Japanese holiday special. Look up the Japanese holiday, Donna. What is the Japanese holiday Wednesday about? Whatever the hell it is. So, you know, so you'd be family time doing that. So by the next week, we may be deep into this and have a template for other content providers, because I told James, you let us, we'll do what we can to help, and we'll make sure you integrate into the future of, and use you as an example for all the other guys, and here we go. So he's like, let's do it. So we're doing it. Can you help? You guys, some of you guys got some skills? You want to get on this? All right. Well, let me know, because there's some money to be made. You know, and there's going to be other guys lined up to do the same thing. You know, we got a bunch of other content providers. They see it coming. And who are they? Well, who do you expect it to be? It's going to be all the traditional, you know, that they're going to go after. But a lot of the guys, they're hooked onto that YouTube tit. And one of the big things that a lot of them, including James and a lot of other guys, they use YouTube for is for the compression, for the resolution of the file. You can record it in whatever, and then you can have it come out in a codec that is, you know, here's a lower res for this platform, here's the bigger one for this one, here's the one I want for my archive, here's the, you know, and it does that for you. The processing of it, it does that well. That's how it works. It's able to compress the files. So I'm going, well, if that's the only reason people really are stuck on YouTube, can we do that? Is it part of the scripting? You just automatically, as it goes in, you can choose the resolution or multiple outputs and different hashes. Yes, called scripting, and run it through a computer that can, you know, take it, and it's done. And I go, okay, well, that's cool. Let's do that. So we're just doing it. You guys want to help? Japan, it's Golden Week, April 29th to the 5th, collection of four national holidays. So they just lump them all in. So it's like in America, every holiday happens to fall on a Monday. It's a three-day weekend. You know, so they throw them all in there. We just take the week off. We're partying. All right, cool. They always do that. So this is, I just want to share with you, you know, behind the scenes, we're working on this stuff. And get it. That's why with Roger, you know, Anarchist, you know, Roger Agora out of San Antonio, I'm like, look, start. You know, write it out. I think I'm just being a butthead. I really want to see. And maybe we'll, I don't know. I'm thinking, you know, what's it got to be? A campground? I like campground. Do you like campground? Because 14 days, I kick you out. I don't like 14 days of yet. Done. You know, then what are the regulations I got? See, it's all, man. Oh, good.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Oh, final segment. What shall we talk about? We got to get in the news a little bit. You know, does anything, I haven't clicked on it. I'm going to go look at, I've been, you know, looking at some of the news and getting ready to send the staff to put up on Freedom's Phoenix on the front page. So I'm seeing kind of what's happening now. But we look at Freedom's Phoenix, and man, Freedom's Phoenix is so good. It's got a bunch of stuff, bunch of times. You know, you can see, you know, kind of, you get a radar screen of what's up. You know, biggest reason, I tell you what gets a lot of traffic is a lot of the guys, they go there to see Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin and precious metals prices. You know, on the top left up there, the widget, Roberts. Bitcoin Cash, 873. All right, it's back up again. Let's see. Bitcoin, 55,000. Gold, 1777. Down a little bit. Silver, 2634. It's gone up a little bit. But it's kind of, it's still cheap. I'm not thinking, unless I'm getting, counting on some 15 gazillion percent return on some crypto, I'm just like, you know, I get more silver, okay, I'll do that. So it's and what do you use? You know, Bitcoin transaction fees are stupid again. We knew that, I mean, anybody that listens to the show knows that we knew that was going to happen, and they're just stupid. So I don't deal with stupid, so I'm not doing stupid. But the, what are some of the prices, the articles here? Food prices are about to soar right alongside gas and electricity costs. Now, a lot of you guys, I'm sure some of you older guys may remember, this is what happened. I started doing radio in 03. In 04, about, they stopped reporting the money supply. You have M1, 2, and 3, and one of them, they did, you could derive, you know, the money supply from the other two reports, but anyway, they didn't want it out there. Then they have what they call COLA, cost of living adjustments. This was something that, you know, senior citizens got in and you got to do this our way and we're AARP and we vote and whatever. And what it was is that every so often they go to the consumer price index and they say, all right, we have inflation. Oh, inflation's at 8.whatever%. Well, we got to, you know, increase the Social Security benefits by whatever to, you know, keep up with inflation so grandma's not eating cat food. Well, then they go, yeah, that's the law, consumer price index. But what they didn't say in the law was what the consumer price index, how it is determined. Well, consumer price index, they come in, this is like 04 around there, and they said, you know what? In the inflation, the prices were not including food, fuel, or housing. So if you don't live anywhere, you don't go anywhere, and you don't eat, there's no inflation according to them. So you didn't get a cost of living increase. So, okay, that's how they want to play. They just changed the metric. Well, what do you think they're going to do now? You know, so food prices are soaring up, gas and electricity cost, but you're not going to get an increase in any benefits. That was in the law because they just, that's not part of the consumer price index anymore, or at least it wasn't, you know? So I'm going, all right, that's how they want to play. You know, we had this one that I thought was really cool. Farming robots kills 100,000 weeds per hour with lasers. And it's when they just start to sprout. They straddle them. It has wheels that straddles the row. And it just sees and it can identify what are weeds and what are not. And it zaps the crap out of them. Boom, 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 boom. Zoop, you know, pew, pew. Oh, it's a pew sound. That's what it is. Pew, 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 pew. I pewed it. You know? My grandson goes, oh, I pewed it. Pewed it. What the hell are you talking about? You know, I shot it. And I go, oh, okay, you pewed it. I get it. So then it's going to be pewing weeds. Pew, 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 pew. Well, it's called carbon robotics. And it, I don't know why, because. And it goes along the planting mounds are, and it just can recognize a weed and it zaps it. Okay, that's cool. Well, I'm not about that. Bad news, Lori Paul Payette, Ron Paul's eldest daughter, died from cancer. So, you know, Donna and Ron had an exchange and kind of, you know, our condolences and so on. And I'm sure he gets a lot of love. So that's, you know, keep him in your prayers there. Losing a daughter, man, that would suck. That is just, oh. Anyway, now you know that's up there. First-time gun buyers help push record U.S. gun sales amid string of mass shootings. I don't know what they think is going to happen. And these shootings are still, you know, they go on. It's just how much they get reported. And it's, you know, who's the shooter and the shootee, and it's so politicized, it doesn't matter. They know that they're going to, the amping up of this is what's driving gun control and all that. So, I mean, I better get a gun now while I still can. And who are they? First-time gun owners, young and old from across the country, are helping to push record levels of gun sales for what looks like the second year in a row. Well, is that the impact they thought it would have? And what about they going, yeah, but we got a record of them? Well, what if there isn't a record? Do you have some that doesn't have a record? You know, where's that record? What if I just, you know, bought it? Went to a gun show, saw a guy, you know, hanging out there, which is legal as hell. You know, you can do that. They keep calling it the gun show loophole. You know, they're going to other people and, you know, giving them, like, stuff for getting new property of stuff that we don't like them having that stuff. Wow. Government's getting way too in there. Well, Oregon High School track coach calls for an end to the mask rule after an athlete collapses. Yeah, he's a hero because he waited till after one of his, you know, athletes of track run gun to run around with masks. That's just stupid from the beginning. I'm glad he's doing it and coming out. This is so stupid. Doesn't last because it's stupid. Well, this is, you know, the stupid's about ready to stop. You watch. How Wyoming became the promised land for Bitcoin investors. The state is attracting crypto firms with its cutting-edge legal framework for digital assets. Now, we saw a lot of this happen in Arizona, too. Some of the legislators are trying to make it, you know, friendly for crypto, and there's some of the, federal agents, they don't like it. All right, what are you going to do about it? This is going to be a states' rights thing. It's going to go down the states and counties and communities and individuals. It's decentralization. You know, it's federalization. Federalization, the Fed, you know, the way this country, federalism, you know, as I understood it, I had to get defined on this because I understood it to be it was a federation of individual sovereign states. They had some kind of agreement that loosely kept together. It wasn't be ruled by some central command. So when they say federalism, they're not really talking about, you know, Washington, D.C. telling you what to do. It's about Washington, D.C., protecting the states for them to do what they wanted to do, you know, under Constitution of you're not allowed to violate rights of whatever the hell. I mean, you know, we should, you know, do we really even need to understand it to know it? They don't care. Doesn't matter. They do whatever the hell they want anyway. So that's why I'm just like, I'm not inclined to, you know, fix the process, screw the process. So I just want to have good contracts. Supreme Court takes case seeking to expand concealed carry rights in public spaces. Now, this is a USA Today article. The Supreme Court in America agreed Monday to hear a challenge to New York's gun licensing requirements that could expand protections for carrying concealed weapons in public, putting a major Second Amendment dispute before the justices for the first time in years. This is, I don't know if it's going to get any better. You know, they're going to try and this is definitely going to be a rallying cry to stack the Supreme Court to increase the numbers so Biden can throw in a bunch of we don't like gun people. You know, this is, it says right there in the Constitution. Yep, and these taxpayer-funded shiny robe people are going to tell you whether they can do it or not. That's unconstitutional. Not in accordance to those that say that we can determine whether it's constitutional or not. Okay. Well, okay. That's how you guys want to play it. Buckle up. Inflation is here. Last Wednesday, Zero Hedge reported that based on recent earning calls, companies are freaking out about soaring costs. And today, we got more confirmation of this in a Bank of America report of blah, blah, blah. I want, I'm like, there's new technology coming out in the solar realm that, you know, is going to make it less expensive. But it doesn't matter when the dollar goes to crap. So I am scrambling to decide, Bob's son is big into solar energy. He's, making a business of doing solar on RV, rvsolarconcepts.com. Go check it out. I tell him, and he gets a deal on, I'm ready to pull the trigger on some of the remaining equipment that I have. Get me a deal on that. Boom. Where do I send the money? Get it done now, because a year from now, this summer, it's going to be, you're not going to be able to afford it, you're not going to be able to have it, and you're not going to have the silicon chip because they're using it for embedded everything. Here we go. Got food, 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 food.